So let's turn now to a sport that hasn't made it to the Olympics just yet. Bee hunting. Yes, there are people that hunt bees, but they don't hurt the insects or mount trophies above the mantle. They simply follow them to find their hive. The activity goes all the way back to Rome, 1000 AD, but it's now being used to help answer questions about how to protect our increasingly imperiled bees. Massachusetts relies on bees to pollinate crops on nearly half of its farmland, but an increasing number of the colonies have been suffering from collapse each winter. Bee hunters hope hunting wild bees might tell us more about how we can prevent those large-scale deaths. Joining us now to explain more is Tom Seeley, a professor of biology at Cornell University, an avid bee hunter. His new book is Following the Wild Bees, The Craft and Science of Bee Hunting. Tom, welcome.
My pleasure to be here, Scott. Thank you for inviting me.
I have to admit, today is the first day that I heard about bee hunting. So what is it and how do you do it?
Well, it works in the following way. The bee hunter starts his search for a wild colony, and I'm reading from my book here, starts his search for a wild colony by catching bees on flowers and then baiting them to forage at a small bonanza of sugar syrup that he has bewitchingly scented with anise. Next, he determines the direction to the bees' secret residence from the paths of their homeward flights. Then he gradually moves his sugar syrup feeder, together with the bees, down their flight line home, their bee line. Finally, he zeroes in on their mysterious dwelling place, some hollow tree, old building, or abandoned hive.
I love that part of the introduction to your book. So this is about finding where the bees live, but it started off as a technique for finding honey, right? And people would take the hives or often take the whole tree with them?
Oh, yes. This is a technique or an activity, a craft that goes back to before probably even we were humans. It's been done for 50, 100,000 years and was done originally by humans to get the honey from wild colonies and to get their brood. And in some cultures, the hunter-gatherer cultures that still exist, at certain times of the year, it's a huge and very important part of their caloric intake.
So as a fan of honey, I feel like I have to ask, in bee hunting in 2016, if you find the colony, are you not allowed to take honey from it? Is that outside the rules of bee hunting?
Well, it's not. There really aren't any rules to this bee hunting, Scott, so it's up to the individual. But today, it's so much easier to buy honey from a beekeeper. I don't think that bee hunters wouldn't want to go to the trouble of cutting open the tree and ladling out the honey or just harvesting. It's a lot of work.
So in the book, you say that you can get started with bee hunting with a kit that costs $28.12. So it's a very specific number. What's in the kit?
Well, first of all, that number comes from what Henry David Thoreau spent to build his house out at Walden Pond. So that was a good reference point. He was an avid bee hunter himself, so that's that link. What's in your kit is something the most important tool is a little device called a bee box, which is something you build yourself, so it's basically free. It's a little device you use to capture bees off of flowers and introduce them to this rich food source, which is your bait. The other items in the kit are very simple. They would be, the most expensive item is a magnetic compass. So when you sight the flight directions of the bees, you have a number. And then there's some paint pens, a jar of sugar water, might be a jam jar, and a notebook, and of course your pencil. And so that's about it.
And is this your bee kit that you brought into the studio? It's a wooden box, kind of not much bigger than maybe two bricks stacked on top of each other?
Yes. And this is my bee box, the one that I've been using for 40 years in my scientific investigations of the wild colonies of bees.
So what got you started in bee hunting?
What got me started, Scott, was recognition of a gap in our knowledge of the natural history of Apis mellifera, the honeybee. And that gap was just what is the abundance of colonies living in the wild? Honeybees live both in two situations. One is on the managed hives of beekeepers, but also in the wild. And they go back and forth between these two groups, and we knew a lot about how many colonies are living in the wild in the United States, but we had no idea how many were living out in the wild. And it turns out there's probably more living in the wild than even under the beekeeper's management.
You have an anecdote in the book about Henry David Thoreau, and I think the first time maybe that he went bee hunting, and they found some bees that were living in managed hives at that time in the 19th century, right? They didn't find wild bees that day.
Yeah, on that particular day, they caught bees off flowers. It was September 30th, 1852, I think, and the lines that they established caught those flowers on a bank by Walden Pond. All three lines that they established pointed back to known hives in Concord. So they, Thoreau was still excited to realize that, oh, you can track down a colony this way. But in this case, they were the managed hives of three beekeepers.
So we talked at the beginning about honeybee colony collapse and disease. So how does what you're doing help beekeepers keep these bees healthy?
It gives us a reference point, Scott, and it also shows us how bees can survive without being treated with insecticides or pesticides. As you mentioned at the beginning of the program, beekeepers are experiencing very high percentages of colony deaths over the winter. This can be, usually now it's more than 30%, can be 50%. And the source of that is an introduced parasitic mite, which spreads viruses and changes the disease ecology of these viruses. So they're much more virulent than they used to be. And the solution beekeepers use now is to treat their colonies with acaricides to knock down the mite populations and control the viruses. Well, the honeybee colonies that are living in the wild don't get those treatments, and yet they are surviving just fine. And so they offer us, by studying them, we can learn an alternative solution whereby honeybee colonies can live healthily without being treated with acaricides, pesticides.
I have to ask the obvious question just because a young member of my family was stung over the weekend. So the question is, have you ever been stung in all these years of bee hunting?
I don't think I've ever been stung bee hunting, Scott. And the reason for that, I have been stung as a beekeeper. I'm a beekeeper as well as a bee hunter. I don't get stung as a bee hunter. And you might wonder, why is that? It's because in contrast to beekeeping, where you're actually opening up the bee's hive or nest, you're disturbing the bees. When you're bee hunting, you're doing just the opposite. You're offering them some goodies, and they're happy to come and visit you. So they're peaceful and calm. And so bee hunting, a feature of bee hunting, in addition to the fact that it's cheap, is the fact that you don't get stung.
Much less dangerous than beekeeping.
Yes, indeed.
Would you tell us about, is there a day for you that stands out as the halcyon day of bee hunting in your career so far?
Oh, great question. Well, maybe so. I had a wonderful bee hunt up at my camp in Maine last August. It's not in my book, but it was one where I started my bee hunt in a field of goldenrod by my house in Pembroke, Maine. And the bees, bless them, shot out across the river, across an estuary, a half-mile-wide body of water, over to woods on the adjacent peninsula. And over the next couple of days, I lined my way back to that tree. And it was a spruce tree up on a ledge, dead old spruce tree. And there's nothing quite like the experience, Scott, of being able to track your way back using simple tools and your patience and your good vision, and a few other skills to find that really needle in a haystack or tree in a forest that is the home of the bees. It's a huge high, a huge thrill to achieve that.
So I noticed that you're married. You're wearing a wedding band, but you dedicate your book instead of maybe a partner, spouse, to the honeybees that live in Arnott Forest. So where is Arnott Forest?
The Arnott Forest is a research forest owned by Cornell University. And in that is the location where I've studied for 40 years the population of wild honeybee colonies. And it's that population that is revealing to us the secrets by which wild honeybee colonies are able to survive without chemical treatments. And for example, what we're learning is that they've changed genetically, they've gone through very strong natural selection, and they have a lifestyle that's very healthy as well.
Well, Tom, thanks so much for being here. Tom Seeley is a professor of biology at Cornell University. His new book is Following the Wild Bees, the craft and science of bee hunting. Tom, thanks.
You're most welcome, Scott. My pleasure.
That's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Scott Kirzner. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.